Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 5th of April, recording at 7:36 p.m. and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just have a quick look at what's going on in the various markets, because these are exciting times. Okay. Starting with stock markets, we have seen some nervous selling in here this week. Now, just as a background to all of this, I've really been saying on a daily basis, at least when I've been doing the audios, since the end of January, that we had entered after a very, very good rally. We had entered a reaction and consolidation and corrective phase for overall markets. It wasn't something that slammed the door shut on all of them, but one by one they were being picked off, with the weaker ones being the first to go down, the European markets, which have been sort of a softer underbelly here during the last few years, and also a number of the resources producers, although not all of them. Now, that process is of softening up, loss of upside momentum for various stock market indices has continued, and it's contributed to a change in sentiment generally, with investors becoming a little bit more cautious. Now, some stock markets are still really quite strong, and therefore my best guess is that we are in the latter stages, in the second half of this corrective phase overall, because while most stock market indices clearly show a loss of upside momentum, there are a few that are holding out really quite well. And New Zealand, for instance, a number of the ASEAN indices as well, although again most of those have actually lost upside momentum and are ranging following the pretty persistent upward trends that we had seen. And the biggest story, though, of this stock market cycle late last year and at the beginning of this year is Japan. And that remains very much in form here. It was quite interesting. We had, following that BOG, BOJ meeting, Bank of Japan, and that was the first one run by Mr. Kuroda, and his commitment to vastly increase the purchases of JGBs, and in this effort to blast their way out of this long deflationary cycle. The yen has certainly been weak, and the Japanese stock market has been one of the best performers here overall. But while it was quite interesting to see that the Nikkei 225, though it had another good day, up 1.5%, it nevertheless closed on the low of the day, and had been considerably higher, had been up over 13,000 at one stage. So although this has resisted the overall reaction and consolidation phase that we're seeing for global stock markets, it hasn't. That's going to be a headwind or a leash restraining upside potential, I think, over the next few weeks. But nevertheless, on a medium to longer term basis, I do think the Japanese situation is exciting, and it's one that is certainly well worth remains well worth participating in. Now, elsewhere, the European stock markets, I have described those as the soft sort of underbelly of the global market cycle, and that really remains true here today. Many of these indices are down near their lows of recent weeks, and also some of the relative strength handouts, such as the German DAX index. That's down 2% here today, so clearly being ensnared in the overall reaction phase. And Wall Street also is down here today, although it's pegged back losses. We've got the S&P, as I speak, down just under 12 points. That's 1548, and the Dow down 70.73. That's the smallest decline. NASDAQ down just under 1%. Also, against this background, and another sign that investors are becoming more nervous, is that you'll not be surprised to hear that long-dated government bonds are really quite strong, and bond prices, that is. So they've pushed up sharply in here today, and have been moving steadily up through resistance within their large overall trading ranges. Now, they're probably starting to get overextended here a little bit, but we have to remember that even though I have a bearish longer-term view, and I'll have more on that later, but the central banks are buying, and very, very strongly as well. So a huge amount of money has been coming into the economic systems of so many large countries, and led, of course, by the United States, but the ECB is involved in similar action, and also we now have Japan in an enormous reflationary effort. So that's helping to keep these yields relatively low, or lower than they would be otherwise, in my opinion. It was quite interesting here today, though, because we saw the JGB, that's a Japanese government bond, we saw the 10-year yield actually drop down to, it almost takes my breath away. I think it's a new record low, got down to 0.3, so less than a third of a point on a 10-year yield basis. Now, what it didn't end there. What also happened is that we then saw a very sharp sell-off in the market yesterday, but then it picked up. It's picked up again in here today. So some fairly volatile conditions in these markets. And I regard these long-dated government bonds as dangerous over the medium to longer term, but we still have, as I say, all the central bank buying helping to keep them up. Now, looking at commodity markets, again, not surprising to see with the stock markets down, not entirely across the boards. If the most relative strength handouts are in Asia here today, but a generally weaker tone overall, and that's been true all week, is that we're seeing a bounce in the precious metals in here today. And gold is the star performer here today, and it's currently up just under $26 back to 1580. Now, it is still within its medium-term downward trend, and I will be wary of the sustainability of rallies until we do see a break of that medium-term downward trend. More on this again a little later as we go into the more of the longer-term outlooks. The industrial metal sector also has been very weak here overall. And that's if we're looking for a silver lining in terms of what happens with stock markets generally, to see that sector be so soft in here suggests to me, well, if we see if we see conformity with other bull market cycles, I would expect the resources sector to pick up in the latter stages of a bull market run that may actually lie ahead. But again, more on that in a few minutes. What I'm relieved to see is that the price of crude oil has come back. Now, obviously, people will look at that as a sign of economic weakness overall, and that's partly right. I think we've certainly seen a big flush out in terms of speculative long side activity in the commodity markets. But we've got Brent down over $2 here today, down to 104. And that's versus $119, which we saw in the middle of February. So that's quite a pullback in Brent. And repeat that I'm quite relieved to see that, because we know that this has been a difficult decade for energy prices in terms of supplies being relatively tight. The last decade was even tighter, and our longer-term view is that energy prices will ease in real terms in the decades ahead. But I was concerned, and I've often mentioned that a spike in oil prices due to political uncertainty. I don't think it's going to be North Korea, but we've had some fairly volatile conditions, turbulent conditions in a number of the Middle East's oil-producing countries. And we know that the supply-demand balance has been relatively tight, despite the renewables that are being developed in many countries and utilized in many countries, and not to mention the shale gas and oil development, which is the big game changer. Again, more on that in a moment. but so far, we have oil prices. They're not cheap, but equally, they're not strong enough to choke off economic recovery, which I feel we'll see more evidence of towards the latter part of this year and continuing into 2014. And just lastly, a brief comment on currencies here. The yen is quite weak once again. That's also been volatile, but against the U.S. dollar, for instance, we see that a dollar now buys 97.64 yen. I think that's a new high on this move, and I certainly don't think that's over. U.S. dollar, which has been strong as markets have weakened, has eased in here a little bit today. But the other two big stories in the currency markets are the Korean won and the Taiwan dollar. And they've been quite soft, having been very strong up until this December. And the reason, of course, is this weakness of the Japanese yen. So the Koreans and the Taiwanese are very anxious that their currencies do not appreciate any further, and that they actually weaken somewhat in line with the yen. Okay, now let's go on to the big picture, overall outlook. And Again, there's a little bit of creative thinking in this, inevitably, because no one knows exactly what the future holds, but we know what's happened in the past, and we can see similarities. And overall, as you know, the Fuller Money view is that the valuation contraction, a secular stage of valuation contraction, which we've really been talking about since early in the century, and it actually started in about 1999 with the so-called, at the time, old economy. Remember, nobody uses those terms anymore, but they were used daily back then. They fell back very sharply, and then of course in 2000 we had the tech crash. And evaluation contraction cycle doesn't take place in a clear linear fashion. It's going to be a jagged trend overall. And valuations picked up as stock markets strengthened through into 2007. But for many, many markets, the valuations that we saw at the highs in 2007 were a little bit lower than the valuations that we had seen back in 1999 and 2000 for most of these markets. And then the valuations fell very, very sharply with the whole 2008 sell-off. But have picked up due to the strength of the recoveries that we've seen really since that bull trend beginning in 2009 has actually developed. And today, valuations, I would not describe them as extreme, but I would say that they are relatively high overall. So what happens? What happens going forward? Well, we think we'll probably see a significant amount of ranging, but first let's tie this in with the corrective phase that we're in right now. I have said that I felt that not long ago, towards the end of last month, that we were completing the first half of this phase. My best guess, and it can't be any more than a guess, is that this will carry on through the rest of April and pretty well all of May. And thereafter, Owen and I would not be surprised if we saw a fairly lengthy period of ranging here by stock markets. And when I say that I feel that we're in the latter stages of this overall valuation contraction cycle. The last one that occurred, which really ended in 1982, it had persisted, and you probably recall seeing the charts, which we've shown often enough, those long-term charts, but it started in the late 1960s, and you had a couple of severe downward moves. The really big one was in that 1973 and 1974 period. But in the latter few years, we had largely ranging closer to the higher side of the overall broad trading range that we had seen on Wall Street, and a good many other indices conform to this pattern to a greater or a lesser degree. Now, I think that's what lies ahead over the next few years. I know a lot of people are really quite bearish and have remained so despite the strong recovery. You can understand why they're quite bearish. I produced that David Stockman piece earlier in the week, well worth reading if you haven't seen it. But he'd pointed out that the U.S. indices got back up to the highs that we saw in 2000 and also in 2007, and he was pretty convinced that the risks at these levels were really quite high. We're more sanguine about it overall, and think that Well, this is a corrective phase that we're in right now, that it's not going to produce another bear market anytime soon, and we're much more likely to see several years of overall ranging activity. But I emphasize that within that framework, that most indices as would remain near the higher side of their broad trading ranges. Now, the valuation contraction cycles historically have been followed by secular bull markets, and it's our view that we will see that pattern actually repeated. And there are plenty who are going to disagree with that, not least the Austrians, because the valuations are considerably higher than we saw in 1982, or that we saw a few years after World War II. And the circumstances are really quite different. And I won't repeat all the arguments on this, but if we're going to get a super cycle bull market, and before that happens, I think we have to get through the wind down of quantitative easing. That's a big hurdle. Some people are quite alarmed by the prospects. Other people pretend, at any rate, to be quite sanguine about it. The prospect makes me a bit nervous here overall. But and we don't actually know exactly how all of that will play out, but I think it's going to be enough of a headwind to hold stock markets largely within broad trading ranges, probably for a few more years. Now, again, I emphasize that there is a lot of creative guesswork. Hopefully, it's creative. That goes on in a long-term forecast of this nature, but we'll always have the chance of tailoring it as we go along. And I'm thinking out loud and just sharing my thoughts and expectations with you, obviously, as we always do in Fuller Money. But if we're going to get a super cycle bull market, becoming clearly evident in the latter portion of this decade, then there are going to have to be some major fundamental factors that will be contributing to that. And the big one that I've mentioned on a number of occasions is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. While people are worrying about Europe's debts and other problems around the globe, what has not slowed is this accelerated rate of technological innovation. And I think everyone is really quite aware of that, and it's something that we're going to see continuing to increase in overall speed. And this has phenomenal potential for corporations, not least the autonomies that we like so much and that Owen reviews on such a regular basis. But in terms of increasing the overall efficient business models of the autonomies, I think the technology they are the main beneficiaries of this accelerated rate of technological innovation, provided they keep up, right? They keep up with it, and the better ones will, but some will also stumble. There is a not quite a double-edged sword aspect to the accelerated rate of technological innovation, but there is a risk, and that is that if you stand still for too long and your competitors move ahead in terms of their own technological developments, then you can fall behind really very, very quickly, as we've seen with a number of companies, particularly in the technology industry itself. And in my view, the main beneficiaries of a cycle of accelerated technological innovation, well, there will be some some of the tech companies, but will they endure? IBM might. It deals largely in research these days. But many of these shares shoot up and then fall back fairly quickly as someone else surpasses them in a highly competitive field overall. So my feeling really is that the big industrial manufacturers, also the big autonomies that cater to the growth in middle-class consumers around the globe, that's a huge story, that those companies are the primary beneficiaries of technological innovation, and as are private individuals. And you just look at all the gadgets that you use, or in some cases, perhaps understandably, choose to avoid. I say that with a smile as I take a drink of water here to keep the cough in check. Now, what other factors are there? Well, we'd have to have recovering global economies to see a super cycle. And more than recovering global economies, we'd have to see a sustained period of global economic growth. Now, I've often said that when you get these credit crisis problems, and really it's specialists in this field who've said it long before me, and I'm picking up on their knowledge of this, that it takes between 5 and 7 years following these credit crisis recessions before you see anything approaching a normal environment. Well, if we take that from start with 2009, and we're in the fifth year, and we're only a little more than a quarter of the way through the fifth year of that cycle. And then there are other factors which people may well feel will extend it a little bit longer. But I think the worst is behind us. I certainly think the worst is behind us in terms of stock market downward moves, and that the medium to longer term future is going to be a lot more bullish than most people dare to even hope today. Now, okay, third factor, and I'm going to cite five. A third factor here is the increasing acceptance of capitalism. Now, that is not really much of a debatable point. It's clearly a fact, and that has been the key to growth. There are plenty of problems with the capitalistic system, but it works better than anything else, and so we've largely gotten away from all of these horrendous other economic systems that have held so many countries in check for such a very, very long time. Now, a fourth factor, which is certainly a floor money forecast, and again, not everyone agrees has agreed with this over the last few years, but is that we will see cheaper energy in real terms. I think more people are falling in line with the floor money view, and I don't mean that to sound arrogant. I hope we're right on that. But if we are, here's why. And basically, we see all the money that has poured into the so-called green renewable technology field. I think that's increased our energy costs a great deal in the latter part of the last decade, and also in this decade, but those systems will become more efficient as time goes on. But they've been rolled out prematurely in my position. But the big factor here that I think falls very much in line with the cheaper energy in real terms that I've been talking about, and Owen's been talking about, is the development of shale gas and oil. And that's the fracking technology controversial? Was there any extraction process that has not been controversial? I don't think so. But this was, of course, a United States invention. It's now spreading rapidly around the world. Some countries are saying no. There was an article out, I'll see if I can post it, on Spain, which has said no to fracking in an area where it has very quite substantial deposits of shale gas and oil, because they want more evidence. And I think that will probably be forthcoming. And I think also some countries will say, well, okay, this is politically not the most popular thing to actually be doing, particularly in areas where there might be large population centers. So let's wait, and we can buy from other people. If we get a glut of supply, they will be wanting to export some of their excess energy supplies in terms of oil and gas. And then, of course, there's the green factor. But the reality, in terms of the way this is turning out, is that oil is the energy source that has been utterly dominant throughout our lives. But that's losing ground. It's losing ground rapidly, and it's losing ground to natural gas. And as the technology continues to develop, which makes it much easier to transport the natural gas, we know that among fossil fuels, that's the cleanest burn by far. And I'm actually quite optimistic that as the fracking technology spreads to more countries and they're able to produce more natural gas, I think natural gas is well on the way to becoming, it's not there yet, but it will become the dominant source of fuel for a good many years. And that will help to clean up the environment overall. And as a sort of a little bit of a relevant digression here, where we have too many windmills and solar panels, which tend to be quite inefficient, and they have to be therefore backed by power stations, which can be fired up very quickly. And most of those power stations, whether we're talking about Germany or other parts of Europe or other parts around the world, other countries around the world, those backup power stations to come in and help out when there isn't a sufficient degree of wind or sunshine, they burn coal, which is, of course, the big polluter here overall. So again, getting back to this this point here, this fourth point. In terms of the factors, the five factors that I think will be the main drivers behind a secular bull market, cheaper energy in real terms, and I think we should see that before the end of this decade. That's a conservative estimate. We may see it well before the end of this decade. And this is not something that's a temporary development. It should be a long-term factor. Now, the fifth one is better corporate governance. Now, this fluctuates, and we certainly had deterioration in corporate governance in the 1990s, and we still see some poor corporate governance around the globe. But in the developed economies in particular, some of the developing economies have also seen an improvement in corporate governance. But I'm thinking particularly in terms of the United States. We saw so many companies go into survival mode. They cut out a lot of fat, and they became much more serious and focused, and Look at the results in the performance of the autonomies that you see, albeit with the help of the tailwind of all that loose money that's flowing through the system. And that loose money provided by central banks, that abundant capital, that is, in my opinion, what will prevent a bear market, another bear market, from happening anytime soon. So there we are. Just to review those very quickly, the accelerated rate of technological innovation, number two, recovering global economies, number three, increasing acceptance of capitalism, number four, cheaper energy ahead in real terms, and number five, better corporate governance. And it won't be until markets have been going up for a number of years that we will probably see that corporate governance start to deteriorate again, but that would be a long way ahead. Now, other areas to talk about here on a long-term basis, government bonds. I think that I mentioned the ludicrously low yields in Japanese JGBs of less than a third of 1% over on 10-year Japanese government bonds. We know that rates in the U.S. and in Germany are well below the 2% level, and that's not that attractive a yield, is it? Especially when you can get that, or often considerably more, in some of the global economies and dividend aristocrats, and those are often often one and the same. Yes, the equity markets are more volatile, so it's best to purchase those shares following setbacks or reversion towards the mean, being in many instances the 200-day moving averages, and not to chase when those autonomies become overextended on the upside, as we saw at the beginning of this year. But the bond risk may seem small because bond prices are doing quite well today. In other words, yields are going down as people are nervous about this temporary setback in stock markets. But think of the history. You know, we're talking about a 31-year bull market plus, which got a big extension to its life thanks to the blowout in 2008 for the global economy. But as some of those forecasts that I made, assuming some of those forecasts start to come right, as I certainly expect, or I wouldn't be issuing them, it will not take too much of a normalization to cause some very, in terms of interest rates, global interest rates, to produce significant losses. And I'm talking about 20 to 40% losses in some of those long-dated government bond positions. Now, I've said repeatedly, that's not something that I think is going to happen overnight. It may take several years in this overall topping out phase, but I think that the rally that we're seeing in here today is a good opportunity if you don't to either move away, or if you don't want to from the sector, but if you don't want to do that, to put in some stops to ensure that prices don't fall back during the time period when you're holding them. And moving on to the commodity markets, the continuous commodity index, that's CCI index. I'm just going to bring that up here today. I want to have a look to see if the precious metal rally has lifted it. It has lifted it a little bit. But it's well worth looking at that index from time to time, and we will certainly post it from time to time, but you can find it at any time in the library. Code CCI, and that's the Continuous Commodity Futures Price Index. And We had an important peak in 2011. Some of the other commodity indices peaked in 2008. I like the CCI because it's unweighted and tracks over 30 commodities here. And it's well off its peaks and hopefully stays well off its peaks for a good long while, but we're not going to go back to the levels that we had seen at the beginning of the century in terms of commodity prices, in my opinion. I think growth will be too strong, supplies will be sufficiently scarce to prevent that from actually happening. But what I expect instead is a number of years of ranging, hopefully staying below that 2011 peak on that CCI index, which was when it got quite close to the 700 level, and the lower side of the range when it briefly got below 350, quite a big difference there. In 2008 and early 2009, and today it's at 544. That sort of middle ground in terms of what I would expect over the next few years. I do not think it will be going back to retest the 2008 and 2009 lows, but the supply story is the big variable here in terms of commodity prices, not least in terms of agricultural commodities. And staple grains and beans are well off their highs, although the rough rice is still higher than I would like to see, having seen some quite volatile activity there where it fell very sharply in March, but then has bounced back this month, and that's currently at just under $15.50. It's still range bound here overall, but obviously that needs some decent crops to bring that lower. The other staple, main staple grains, the corn, the wheat, soybeans, have been trending lower over the last few months, been trending lower this year. And that's a helpful development. It was helped a lot by the strength of crops, the good yields, in other words, in Central and South America. But we are embarking on the very important Western economy crops now. And these markets have been helped by the snowstorms that had occurred in the United States, which particularly near the Texas region, which greatly reduced the risk of a serious drought. But that risk was so high that we'll need a sustained period of generally favorable moisture, really, to ensure a good crop there. And because of the coldish weather that we've seen, not least in Europe, we're going to see later planting than has occurred in many, many previous years. So there are a lot of question marks overhanging the current or the next crops that we'll see here in the West. I should say, but after several years of poor yields, we're due for a stroke of luck on this, and hopefully that comes forth. We will actually see. Now, in terms of currencies, last but not least, the dollar is range bound overall, but there is a good possibility that this is in a slow, gradual, lengthy base building process prior to a stronger period in that secular bull market phase that I'm referring to. And one of the reasons why that dollar could be bottoming out and strengthening over that time period is because of the US's big energy advantage. That advantage will not the US the US will have its abundant energy supplies for a good many of decades. It's just that it's some of its competitive advantage will be eroded as other countries use similar technologies, and I think they will over time. But let's not hold our breath on that, I think is the phrase. And the yen, certainly, I think we will see that weaken further. George Soros was expressing concerns that the weaker yen could slide out of control. I hope not. I don't think that's likely, because this is a managed policy, and they could tighten again if they needed to, but have no need to do so anytime soon, in my opinion. Overall, I think we'll see probably more ranging among other currencies. That's always a factor, of course, in the markets, but I don't see any dramatic collapses. And equally, I think all countries will be anxious not to allow their currencies to to appreciate too much during the very, very competitive economic conditions created by globalization, and that's a good thing. Those competitive pressures are good for consumers and help keep inflation in check overall. And on that note, folks, all the very best to all of you. Have a terrific weekend.